Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We have a program today that I think you're going to really enjoy. We have an exciting event that's coming to the shores of Lake Erie in Conneaut, Ohio, and that is a D-Day landing reenactment. It's been going on for a few years now, and this year they really have a big event planned. We're going to be talking to one of the coordinators in just a few minutes. In the second part of our program today, a serious conflict potentially looming in the Far East, of course. Again, 60 years after the close of battle of North Korea and South Korea in the Korean War, the Korean Peninsula again is exploding almost literally, with North Korea threatening the rest of the region and the United States with nuclear weapons or ICBMs as more missile tests were conducted over the last couple of weeks. President Trump and Secretary of State Tillerson have basically stated that this is an intolerable situation. They're really leaning on China to do something to rein in North Korea. We're going to talk about that with Fred Flights from the Center for Security Policy. That will be part two of today's program. But first, let's turn back to yesteryear, and that is D-Day landing June 6, 1944. This is the 73rd anniversary of the D-Day landings earlier this June. But to commemorate the liberation of Europe, Conneaut, Ohio has now been the home of one of the nation's largest, if not the largest, reenactment of D-Day, and that's coming up on August 17th, 18th, and 19th. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes, but the way in which President Roosevelt announced the liberation of Europe was underway, of course, was with the following broadcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment the troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. For the enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces. Success may not come with rushing speed, but we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteousness of our cause, our sons will triumph.
And that is FDR as he announced to the nation on June 6, 1944, that the D-Day landings had occurred and were underway, and asked for the nation to join him in prayer. That entire prayer can be heard at our website at ohioca.org, and many of our regular listeners will know that the Ohio Christian Alliance moved through legislation in the U.S. Congress a few years ago. Senator Rob Portman was our Senate sponsor, and it was signed by President Obama to add FDR's D-Day prayer in its its entirety at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. We're continuing with the finalization of plans with the Capital Planning Commission and also with the Friends of the World War II Memorial and the U.S. Park Service. We're raising funds right now for its placement at the memorial, and you can make a contribution to that effort as well by going to our website at ohioca.org, just clicking on the donate button, and follow the links, and you'll see a prayer project. Make a contribution there. It is fully tax deductible, and your contribution can help add that wonderful historical presidential prayer that FDR prayed on the morning of the D-Day landings to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. as a lasting tribute. Well, what a wonderful way to bring history to life right here in Ohio on the shores of Lake Erie in Conneaut, Ohio, the D-Day reenactment. And here to talk about it more is one of the organizers, Wayne Heim. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, we're very excited about what you folks are doing. How many years now have you been conducting this reenactment up in Conneaut?
Well, this will be our 18th year this year. We started from humble beginnings, which were just a couple guys, maybe a dozen or so, deciding that they wanted to do something and running up the beach, and the local public just watching a bunch of crazy guys in uniform running up the beach. And each year it kind of grew from there. And now we have approximately 1,400 reenactors who come every year to see the event. That makes us the largest D-Day reenactment in the world and the largest World War II reenactment in the United States.
That's very exciting. In fact, I'll tell you, as a military historian enthusiast myself, I don't know how you've kept this under wraps so long from me personally. And that's why I'm glad and delighted for you to come on the program today.
We share it with 40,000 of our closest friends.
I get that. And, of course, Conneaut, Ohio is just 5 miles from the Pennsylvania border up on Route 90. And so if you take Route 90 heading east into Ashtabula County, little Conneaut, Ohio, will be invaded that day by both the Allied and German forces, reenactors. And there's really some exciting events here. You've got some great equipment. I mean, you've got one of the original Higgins boats. You've got aircraft. You've got artillery pieces, mobile vehicles. Tell us all about what you have planned for.
Well, we should have approximately three. I think we should have three working Higgins boats there this year. It always comes down to the end. Every once in a while, we run into issues with transportation, but we also have some other aquatic vehicles like the Ducks, which are the swimming trucks that came ashore.
Yes,
supplies and men as well. And then we have, I believe, 8 tanks coming this year. We also have, I believe it's the only live-firing German 88 left in the world that comes and protects the bluff and gives the Germans some support. For the big battle on Saturday, the big beach landing, we also have some air cover to give our boys some protection. We have a vintage restored B-25 bomber that flies from Liberty Aviation Museum out in Port Clinton. So they come in and cover the beach, along with Titan Aircraft. They make a 3/4 scale T-51 Mustang. So,
oh, my.
They call them a T-51 versus a P-51, but they're 3/4 scale replicas. And they we have typically about 3 of those that fly cover on the beach as well.
And again, this takes place August 17th, 18th, and 19th. That's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. This is in Conneaut, Ohio. The event is free. They do accept contributions for their ongoing live historical reenactment. And you can learn more at their website. If they just Google D-Day Conneaut, but what's the website?
It's ddayohio.us.
ddayohio.us. And then I printed off the brochure. In fact, it has all 3 days of the schedule. I plan on getting up there a couple of the days myself, and I'm really looking forward to it this year. And then, of course, it has areas for parking. This is a great way, folks, if your children really, it brings history to life. And so we really encourage you to bring the whole family. And they have, you know, again, live reenactors. This is a great teaching time. What I also like, Dwayne, is you have an opportunity for people to visit the camps, I think, on Thursday. Is that right?
Yeah, Thursday is a half a day of programming, and parking is available around the park on the side streets. On Saturday, on Friday and Saturday, when we have more traffic, parking is available on off-site, and there's shuttle buses that run throughout the day, taking people back and forth. So, but the camp is full of, we have a full working camp, so you can come and see what it was like in pre-invasion England and how the Allies had set up their camps and were getting ready to getting all their weapons ready and their vehicles ready and the marching and training, and we have working mess where the guys are fed typical chow and typical locations, so you kind of get to see the whole working order. We also have Commonwealth camp, so you get to see the Brits and the Canadians who also contributed quite a bit to the landings on Normandy. People don't always remember that it was more than just the U.S. that participated in it. There was actually 12 different countries who participated that day. And then we also have three different German camps spread out throughout the park, and a smaller French resistance camp hidden up in the trees as they wreak havoc on the German forces throughout the weekend.
Well, and that's what I like. And I looked at some of the photos where these folks are wearing the regalia of the day, who are French reenactors of the French resistance. So it's very authentic. Of course, there's also medical tents to where people can see how soldiers were treated in the field and triage. But what also here on Friday morning, I see that at 9 o'clock, in encampment and displays open at 9 o'clock to 9:30. German formation, firing of the German 88. Again, this is the one of the last, if not the last, serving German 88 artillery pieces. That will be there. Also, tanks will be firing hourly. This is all on Friday, leading up to the Saturday. Saturday is the day of the actual beach landing. Is that right?
That's correct. And then we have a morning battle on Saturday as well, and then we have two battles on Friday as well.
So
an afternoon and an evening battle.
An afternoon and evening battle. This is awesome. I mean, a lot of work has gone into this. And again, how many years have you been doing this now?
This is our 18th year, and we've talked a lot about the battles, and that's great, and that's one of the things we're commemorating here and giving people an idea of what it may, just a touch of what it may have been like to be there. But a large portion of our event is also what we call living history. For a week in Conneaut, we create what's probably one of the largest museum collections of World War II militaria in the world. People bring from their private collections all these things, and there are plenty of history educational seminars and talks, and people make presentations of what it would be like to be part of a flamethrower team, or you know, what it was like to be a medic on the beach. We have presentations from home front people. So what was it like back in the U.S.? What did people have to go through in rationing and growing their own food and victory gardens and things like that? So we focus a lot on the other aspects and everything else that helped contribute, because it wasn't just the guys on the beach that won this. It was a group effort by everybody. And then one of the biggest aspects of the event is we now have over 150 World War II veterans that come, which makes us the largest gathering of World War II veterans in the country now. And as you know, we're losing them daily here at a rapid rate. So it's pretty incredible. They come, and there are VIPs for the weekend, and we have a whole program for them, and people can come and meet them and listen to them give some talks and talk about their service and activities. And it's an incredibly humbling event.
And again, how many veterans are coming anticipated this year?
Approximately 150.
Wonderful. And we do encourage you, if you're a World War II veteran or you're the family member of a World War II veteran, please look up the website. Again, just Google D-Day Conneaut. That website, again, directly, Wayne, is?
ddayohio.us.
ddayohio.us. And print off the brochure. Let the folks know if you are a World War II veteran and you are coming, so you can get registered and get the special entitlements that are due to you that day. We appreciate your service to our country. And again, like you said, Wayne, I do have an uncle who served in World War II. My dad served, of course, and he passed away a few years ago. He served in the Pacific in the U.S. Navy in 45. My uncle served in 44 and 45 in Europe. Actually went, I think it was like Dave 3-4 through Normandy, and then fought across France, and then in the Battle of the Bulge was wounded, actually given up for dead. He was recovered and 6 months in a hospital, and they said he'd never walk again, but he was the most athletic man I've ever known. He really did recover. He was determined, and he's 92. He'll be 93 this year, Uncle Frank, and he received some of his commendations that he was deserving of that he did not receive back in the day. Senator Rob Portman presented him just 2 years ago in a ceremony in Akron. It was very honoring to him. But again, like you said, we're every day we're losing them. This is a way to keep history alive and to teach our young generation just exactly what the previous generation paid for the price of liberty. What I like here in your closing ceremony, you have a USO-style dance. There's actually a canteen show at the USO. Tell us a little bit about that towards the end of the festivities on Saturday.
Yeah, at the end of the event on Saturday, we kind of culminate the whole weekend with a USO-style dance. We have a live big band that comes and plays, and everybody shows up in their Class A uniforms. So it's a great time for everybody to get together and share a couple beverages and kind of salute those who came before us and pay honor to everybody.
Well, that's got to be a lot of fun with also at 8 p.m. to midnight, a USO-style dance. And so that's got to be a lot of fun for everybody. So that, what a great, great event that you have. And, you know, I just want to commend you and the committee for, again, a living history, keeping it alive, keeping it going. And, you know, when we look at some of the historic movies that were made over time, and we saw some of the equipment that were in those movies for reenactment of the battle scenes, a lot of that equipment is no longer with us today. It's very scarce. Is there any operating P-51 still flying in the air anymore?
Oh, there are. There are plenty of, well, not plenty, but I mean, there are quite a few of them left. We don't have any currently that come and donate their time to the event, but there are ones still operational.
Well, and then this is great that, again, you're dependent upon those who will bring the Higgins boats, do the flyover, those who, the tank enthusiasts. I think it's great that you have 8 tanks coming. What are some of the styles of the tanks that are coming that will be there this year?
I don't have the updated list at the moment, but I know because it kind of changes as it goes along. These are... they're tanks, but they can be somewhat fragile, so the list has been changing over the last couple of weeks. There's a large tank museum down in Florida that brings up, I believe they're bringing 3 tanks this year.
Oh, that's awesome. That's quite an ordeal for them to bring that heavy equipment up the roads.
It is.
Yeah.
They need special permits, and because they don't fit, well, they fit on a flatbed semi-trailer, but they're extra wide, so they need permits for all the states that they go through. So bringing a Sherman or a Grizzly in, or a tank destroyer, it takes a little bit of effort.
Yeah, to say the least. You know, it's funny. I'm looking at very authentic uniforms here, too. I'm looking at the German reenactors. That takes some doing to get a lot of these uniforms to make them look authentic.
Yeah, each reenactor who comes is responsible for their own kit. That's what they call their uniform and their weapon or their tent or their impression that they put on. And a typical kit, a basic typical kit, can run these reenactors upwards of $1,200 to $1,500. And depending on how much they accessorize and how much of that is original equipment, those prices can go up from there.
Well, that's right.
It's quite a commitment.
It really is. And those who have gone to gun shows over the years, as time has gone on, less and less of that equipment and regalia is available for purchase or even for trade. People are really hanging on to it now, and you don't even see it coming to the gun shows for display. I remember growing up, my uncle served in Patton's Third Army. Not many of those guys left. I mean, Patton really ran them ragged, and they died early. But he had, of course, a lot of keepsakes from the war because he was pretty much engaged with the Third Army. So he had Nazi flags. He had, the daggers. He had the Lugers. You know, he had a lot of memorabilia from the war. I think my cousin got passed down to him, but I never had a chance to talk to him about that. He lives in Alabama now. But again, you don't see much of this even out in the public now because people really hang on to it, and it's become more and more very valuable. Now, you say that there's a display of people do bring things so that you can see some of the memorabilia of the day. Explain that.
Yeah, both in the, well, in all the camps, be that the German camp or the Commonwealth or our Allied camp, there are different displays from weapons. We have a demo of German weapons firing that'll go through, and they show the different weapons that were used during the time period, and they'll actually do a firing of the different weapons and explain the pros and cons of each of the different weapons, and that takes place on both Friday and Saturday at multiple times. But we have guys who have displays of the different rifles that were used by the American troops, or the different types of explosives used by both the Germans and the Americans, and how those were hidden, and the pros and cons of it, and what the guys had to do to find them. So there's a lot of presentations. We have presentations in the medics, and they show all the different types of materials that they would have carried into battle, or what the field hospitals would have used.
Mm.
So we have some guy who brings a whole mobile dental unit. So because people had dental problems, or if they were wounded in the face, there had to be something that was done. So there's
wow.
a whole mobile dental unit that is brought and displayed as well. So there's some pretty interesting stuff.
Again, we're talking about D-Day Conneaut 2017. That's August 17th through the 19th. That's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, with the beach landing taking place on Saturday, with real Higgins boats, with heavy equipment, tanks, half tracks will be there, artillery pieces, a flyover. You want to get your family out there to D-Day Conneaut this year, and this is a great opportunity. I think they have 1,400 reenactors this year of Allied troops and German forces that will be participating. This is a great way to teach your family and your young ones about our military and, of course, World War II. We're talking to Wayne Heim, and he's one of the coordinators. God bless you, Wayne, for all that you and the committee have done in bringing history to life here, and especially as an Ohioan, we're very proud of what you've done, sir.
Well, thank you. It's a group effort. There's a core group of about 15 of us that are the main people in charge, but we have a volunteer staff of over 300 people who dedicate a whole lot of time and effort into bringing this alive every year.
Well, thank you, and we look forward to joining you this year, and pray that it's a great event, as always. Thank you so much for being my guest today, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. God bless. Again, Wayne Heim with the D-Day Conneaut Reenactors, August 17th to the 19th, and you can, again, Google D-Day Conneaut and download a brochure and also a schedule. It's a free event, open to the public. They do accept donations. We'll be right back on the other side with Fred Flights from the Center for Security Policy talking about the threat of North Korea. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
And we're back, and we're going to be talking about North Korea with our next guest. He is the senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, Fred Flights. Fred, welcome to the program.
Hey, good to be here.
Well, thank you, sir, for taking time to discuss with us. Obviously, Washington is very busy. The State Department, the president himself, has made some announcements pertaining to the threat that North Korea presents to their neighbors in the region and also the United States. There are analysts now that say with these recent missile fires firings that they could reach the continental United States. In fact, as far into the United States as Denver, Colorado. Your thoughts?
Well, this is a very serious situation, and I've looked a lot at it, and I'm doing some writing on it, and this is where I come down. We don't know whether North Korean missiles can hit the United States or not. There's some question whether they've developed a reentry vehicle. We don't know the reliability of these missiles. But frankly, the United States is a big place. If the North Koreans aim the missile sort of in our direction, there is a chance it would hit us. But frankly, I'm not convinced they're quite as advanced as everyone says. But, you know, we can't take a chance that we're wrong. The point I wanted to make to you is that the trajectory of North Korea's nuclear and missile programs leaves us with a very sobering conclusion I think we have to draw, and that is that this is not going to continue indefinitely. There's going to be a mistake one day. There's going to be a miscalculation, and for that reason, I think conflict is on the horizon, and this president cannot plan on simply kicking this down the road. We've done that long enough. The day's going to come where we're going to have a threat that's so much worse than we are today, and it could be where it comes down to blackmail or some effort by North Korea to lay down an ultimatum: you're going to give us South Korea.
Reading from The Guardian today, relations between the United States and China have reached a pivotal point. Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State of the U.S., has warned calling for efforts to avoid open conflict between the world's two largest economies. At a rare State Department briefing held amid reports that Donald Trump was preparing to order a wide-ranging investigation into Chinese trade practices, the U.S. Secretary of State told reporters that ties were at a crossroads following a long period of no conflict that had lasted more than four decades. We look at North Korea, but without question, it is a proxy agent of China. China, according to the president, as he had met with the premier of China, asking him to help rein in North Korea, supposedly the rogue state. We keep calling it the rogue state. Is it a rogue state, or is it literally just an appendage of China, and it is a proxy, a flexing of the muscle of China? Your thoughts?
China would like it to be a rogue state. It would like North Korea to stick a finger in our eye once in a while, keep a U.S. ally from having a border with China. I'm convinced China is not pleased with what North Korea is doing, but it has never been willing to go the final mile to stop them. Keep in mind, these missile tests cost North Korea billions of dollars. Where are they getting the money? They're getting the money because China has never fully implement UN sanctions. Trade in Pyongyang supposedly is bustling. China is responsible for maintaining North Korea and for giving it the funds to develop its nuclear missile programs.
Well, see, this is what's a quandary to me. I mean, I'm wondering, and there's been some question as to China's capability. Is the Chinese actually involved in this? Are we actually seeing a test program under the guise of North Korea that China's actually trying to, in conjunction with North Korea, figure out its own intercontinental ballistic missile program and its own missile program? What do we know, Fred, in relation to this?
I would say no. There are some people who think that. There is evidence that China has provided the special trucks that are used to transport these missiles. The Chinese say they sold them to transport lumber. These are not lumber trucks. these big trucks with 16 wheels. These are obviously made for missiles. I think that's an important question. But North Korea has iron ore and coal, which China wants. It will provide rare metals, which China's electronic industry wants. And Beijing has not cracked down on these exports to China.
Well, that was what some of the negotiations were. Obviously, President Trump pledging to Appalachia and coal miners here in this country that he was going to take off the reins and the restraints on the coal industry, the war on coal that President Obama enacted, a war on coal here, and by taking off those restraints, exports of coal would open up new markets, China being one of them. And so maybe the negotiations earlier this year, when the premier of China was meeting with Mr. Trump at his golf course down there in Florida early on, the negotiations there talking about reining in North Korea, part of that may have been also economic trade to where we would provide coal for China. Where is that all gone, and where does that stand right now?
Well, I'm not even sure North Korea needs to buy, China needs to buy North Korean coal. I think China doesn't want the North Korean government to fall because they're worried that there would be an influx of refugees and they don't want the chaos. And Ambassador John Bolton, I used to work with Mr. Bolton, has been saying lately, let's just make a deal with China. You put your own government in there. You pick North Korean officials who are not crazy, who will work with the international community, and we'll go along with it. I mean, there are other solutions. It's not a perfect solution, but I think this particular government is going down a road where the outcome is going to be very, very dire.
Well, it's obviously there's a lot of moving pieces and parts here, and I want to go through a list of them with you. For instance, the Chinese themselves, apart from North Korea and what is happening there, this move on South China Sea with these man-made islands and the threat to South China Sea. And then, of course, now negotiations with the Philippines themselves. This is troubling because if the Philippines are starting talks with about the South China Sea with the Chinese ambassador, Vietnam also capitulated to China the kind of conflicts they've been having with China with the fishing lanes and all. There's a lot of moving pieces and parts here in Southeast Asia. Your thoughts?
I think the President Obama's abdication of leadership was really exploited by China in the South China Sea. There was supposed to be a pivot to Asia. My Japanese friends say, you know, we didn't see any pivot. I mean, we saw leading from behind the Middle East. We saw no leading at all in Asia. I think there are a lot of problems left behind by Mr. Obama around the world, and some big ones are in Asia that are going to be difficult to solve. China has built these islands in the South China Sea where there's supposed to be as much oil and gas as Saudi Arabia has, and they have put military bases on, and put missiles and airstrips. That's a big problem.
Well, back in the early 90s, and most people don't recognize this, Subic Bay in the Philippines was one of the largest naval bases in the Pacific. And it wasn't a foreign power that caused us to shut down that base. It was a volcano. And the base had to be evacuated. And this is in the early 90s. That has given way over the years because the Chinese are different. They're not like, you know, the Muslim threat, which is seems to be erratic and irrational in their recklessness of how they attack. China has a long-term patient goal. And so they've been encroaching more and more influence and flexing more and more muscle in the South China Sea, stretching the limited resources now of the U.S. Navy because it's been reduced under President Obama. The fleet has reduced in size. I know we just commissioned a new aircraft carrier, but you know that's not enough to what we're going to be needing. And again, Subic Bay, this is you know, it's a footnote in history, but at the same time, when and again, it wasn't a foreign power; it was a volcano that caused us to have to evacuate and shut down the base. But we never reinstituted a base in the South Pacific of that size and strength and scope. So it basically, when your absence is absent, is when others begin to take influence, and that's why, you know, the regional powers of Vietnam, the Philippines. This is getting heady here. It hits us at a time that we're not quite prepared. We just came through 8 years of downsizing the U.S. military and quite honestly, spending more time on ridiculousness of transgenders in the military and trying to re-educate military members on accommodation of a sexual experiment, socialized experiment, rather than being military ready. And that's what the president is trying to right the ship here. Your thoughts?
I think all that is right. Now, keep in mind that there was growing opposition, a lot of opposition to America keeping Subic Bay. That has changed. The Filipinos want us back. And we've been talking in Washington about really promoting that to both to the Obama administration and to the Trump administration, that we should return to Subic Bay and establish a major U.S. naval presence in the South China Sea. I think that could change this whole situation. And I don't know whether that's in the cards for the Obama administration, but it is being talked about.
And this is so critical. And actually, folks, long term, this is, you know, South China Sea, you can't have passage into the Middle East that way if it closes down, if China begins to flex muscle. People say, why do we need that? And this is my concern, Fred, is that people are very much ignorant of the world today and how the passages through the sea and open waters and free access on international lanes is so important to international trade and commerce. And so when there's this kind of threat economically and then militarily, it poses a major threat to the United States, not just economically, but also as far as national security issues. Your thoughts?
That's exactly right. And bear in mind that China wants to claim this huge territory from the Philippine coast to the Chinese coast as Chinese territory, using these little islands and atolls and basically sandbars that aren't even above water 24 hours a day as Chinese territory. And if you see a Chinese passport, there is a drawing of China that includes the South China Sea as Chinese territory.
Now, one of the other elements here, of course, is Taiwan. Now, Taiwan is, in fact, China may look at Taiwan as our proxy state from the West, because obviously it wants to be independent. It is independent. The new leadership there is now saying not two countries, one China. They basically are more doubling down on the independence of Taiwan. This is an irritation to China. Do you think that this is a factor in all this, irritating the Chinese and why they're doing some of the things they're doing?
It's always a factor. I don't think it's a driving factor for these issues at this time. They are very particular about how the United States deals with the Taiwan issue. I think there are other issues that are driving the relation between the U.S. And China and the North Korea situation, but Taiwan is always there.
Mr. Tillerson, obviously the Secretary of State, he hasn't even been 6 months into the job now, just about 6 months. Your assessment on how he's faring as Secretary of State with the large plate of challenges that were left him from the previous administration?
Really, he has quite a challenge ahead of him. He has a department that is very much opposed to President Trump. It's a very bloated bureaucracy and a lot of positions and special envoys that are duplicative or don't make any sense were created by the Obama administration. He's trying to get rid of them. Whenever he does, you know, they scream bloody murder that Tillerson is shutting down our diplomatic capability. I think he has made a very good impression in Europe and in Asia and with the Russians. And, you know, I'm optimistic it's going to work out. I wish he would staff the State Department faster. I think many of his positions should have been filled months ago, and my understanding is some of them will be filled soon. But President Trump cannot implement his foreign policy if the State Department continues to be staffed by people put in place by the Obama administration.
And that can that includes ambassadorships. Obviously, President Trump announced the relieving of ambassadors that he intended to appoint many new ambassadors. But many of those appointments, like other appointments, are being held up by the U.S. Senate. When are we going to see an impasse in this blockade by the Democrats for the approval of these appointees so that the Trump administration could have its day and its fair opportunity? The United States, the people of the country, elected this man. He is deserving to have his company of people in various areas of the departments, including the State Department. Your thoughts?
Well, look, I got to level with you. The few appointments that the president has made, they're being held up. But most haven't been nominated. Most have not been nominated. Most are vacant. So, look, I'm supporting the president and this administration. But I don't understand why they're not putting forward nominations. I don't get it.
Well, that's interesting, maybe because of the other agenda being held up. I mean, why appoint if they're just going to sit there? I mean, what I've heard from
See, the thing is, the Senate can't block them anymore because the filibuster rule and appointments is gone. I know some of the reasons. There's a lot of fighting between the White House and the State Department and the White House and the Defense Department. But that's not an excuse. These positions have to be filled. And I just think it's unacceptable that here we are in August and most of the ambassadorships have no nominees. Most of them.
Well, you know, obviously from our standpoint, that's something we're going to be praying about. We pray every day for this president and the administration. And, you know, he's done some great things. I mean, for instance, last week's announcement by announcing Senator Sam Brownback, former Senator Sam Brownback, now governor of Kansas Brownback, who's at the end of his term, announced him as the ambassador for religious freedom that will work directly with the State Department and Mr. Tillerson. I love this position. I'm really encouraged by it. There's so many religious discrimination and persecution issues around the world for Christians and other religious minorities. I think it's going to be well served for the State Department to weigh in on that level. What's your thoughts?
I think he's a great choice, and I don't mean to be negative against the president. I want him to succeed, and I think he has to tell Tillerson, fill these jobs and fill them with good people.
Well, that's exactly right. We're talking with Fred Flights from the Center for Security Policy. We're talking about North Korea. If you've missed any of today's program, you want to look us online at ohioca.org. You could also share the podcast. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the other side with some closing thoughts. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do.
And we're back with Fred Flights from the Center for Security Policy. We're talking about North Korea and China and the Far East and the threat that looms. The Secretary of State and the President have both talked about how things are escalating in the region, and it's going to take a lot of detente among the different players to be able to work this one out. Here on Saturday, according to this report in the paper, it said Trump attacked China on Twitter on Saturday, claiming his foolish predecessor had allowed them to make hundreds of billions of dollars a year in trade while they did nothing to thwart North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Chinese state media hit back unusually robust language, condemning Trump's inflammatory and emotional venting. Tensions look to set further intensify this week, with multiple reports suggesting Trump is preparing to hit back against what he views as Beijing's unfair trade practices and its failure to cooperate on North Korea by launching a so-called Section 301 investigation. What is that, Fred?
I regret, I don't know.
Okay. Well, well, again, obviously what he's talking about now is that, you know, China is unfair trade practices. He campaigned on this, talked about currency manipulation, how they're not really a fair trading partner, that we're being taken advantage of by China. I mean, he said that all year long as he campaigned. Mm-hmm. He talked about how things would be different in the new administration. So this is a little bit of the kind of back and forth that you would expect. But when you add to that the layer of the military tensions in the region, it does make it very disconcerting.
It is disconcerting, and it is a serious threat. And, you know, I think it's time to say, look, we can't kick this down the road. China, we need your help with this. I think Trump made this point very clearly to President Xi when they met. And I think that the best way without resorting to force is a strong and decisive United States. And we have to demonstrate that to China, and we have to demonstrate that to North Korea. If we are not seen as strong and determined, they're just going to laugh us off like they did with the Obama administration.
Do you have conversations with your former boss, Mr. Bolton, and what's his thoughts? I know he's been on some talk shows as of late. You suggested already that he's saying, well, maybe we should make a deal with China to basically put in their own representatives in a North Korean government. Is that even possible at this point?
Well, I mean, I think he's looking at a lot of possibilities, but Ambassador Bolton understands that this situation is, the trajectory is very, very troubling. that as North Korea's nuclear and missile programs grow more and more dangerous, the possibility of a calamitous outcome is growing.
South Korea, noticing that the Obama administration was not really robust in their defenses in the South, they have taken things into their own hands for their own quick response in the event of a North Korean assault. In addition to that, Japan also is increasing its military spending and is expanding its Navy for the first time since World War II to this level. Your thoughts on that?
I think Japan understands the threat. Unfortunately, President Moon, who took office in May, would not let us deploy the THAAD system to intercept North Korean missiles because President Moon, I'm afraid, is sympathetic to a more conciliatory approach towards North Korea. I think he's reconsidering that based on North Korea's recent missile test. But, you know, frankly, the election of President Moon did set us back a little bit in dealing with North Korea.
You know, again, the inattentiveness of previous administrations has brought this to a head of kicking the can down the road, like you said, is causing this only for the problem to get worse, one in which we need to pay attention to and be very vigilant of and certainly as God's people to be praying for. Give us the information for the Center for Security Policy, a number of issues like this where people can get valuable resources.
Please go to our website, securefreedom.org. We have a variety of excellent publications, some of which you can read on the website for free. Some are available on Amazon.com. SecureFreedom.org, that's where we are.
Thanks, Fred, for being my guest today. We'll have you back real soon. Thank you, my friend.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Again, that was Fred Flights from the Center for Security Policy. And again, if you missed any of today's program, you want to log on to our website at ohioca.org, and you can look up today's program and share with a friend. If you've missed any part, you can hear the entire broadcast, and we encourage you to do that. We have a number of archived broadcasts that you can share with your family and friends. And if you'd like to make a contribution to this program to help us to stay on the air, you can do so at our website. Just Google Ohio Christian Alliance and look at the top of the page and find the donate button and make a contribution. We certainly appreciate it, and we'll continue. And stay vigilant as well as we pray for our country in the times in which we live. God bless. Have a good evening.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.